I firmly believe that we deserve, period.
I just feel like it's important to keep saying that out loud, that this is us learning in public.
The foundation of I Do Not Have Trash Politics is really just relationships, right?
So if you're not aware of how powerful you are, then how can you be using your power to bring others up?
We're giving you collective liberation. We're giving you personal healing. We're giving you millennial auntie with a mic.
You're listening to Seen, the podcast. Self-love is a topic so common that it's become almost cliche, something we can give lip service to, but struggle to meaningfully engage with. So for this episode, Nick and I wanted to interview someone who could help guide us through this topic in a substantial, thoughtful, and truly embodied way. Luckily, we've had the privilege of knowing someone in our local community whose work centers love, and not that one-dimensional Hallmark kind of love. Her work is rooted in what I would call love with teeth. It's love in action, love that demands justice, that honors rage, that holds the spiritual dimension of our humanity while embracing the full spectrum of what makes us human. We had the honor of sitting down with Nadine Tilma, who shared with us a kind of brilliance that comes from not only years of study and work in her field, but the embodied wisdom that comes from lived experience. Nadine is proudly Black and queer, and particularly values radical love, honesty, and compassion as revolutionary tools. In her work and life, she centers creativity, playfulness, rest, and the embracing of our whole humanity. Nadine is a registered clinical counselor in independent practice and is honored to support Black, Indigenous, and other racialized folks in their healing and spiritual journey. She provides one-on-one therapy, runs healing circles, and facilitates public discussions about the impact of oppression and the path towards healing and liberation. You can follow her on Instagram at dancing_ancestress. Nick and I sat down with Nadine to discuss what radical self-love truly is, how we can move past the superficial expressions of self-love and into the deeply complex forms of it, and how radical self-love exists and supports and protects us, even when it feels impossible to reach. Have a listen and then join us after the interview as we unpack what we learned. So Nadine, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm a huge admirer of your work, and I know Nick and I have been really excited to get to have this conversation with you. So thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm truly honored to be in this space with you both. So thank you.
Yeah, so let's get right into it. So we're talking about radical self-love today. I wanted to ask you, how are you understanding radical self-love today at this point in time?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. I'm on the journey and humbly discovering and acquiring more knowledge and more places where I get to embody self-love. But I think for me, what feels like radical self-love is maybe creating space for all of me, creating space for all of our parts, to really honor our humanity, to honor our wholeness, to honor our journey with full acceptance and celebration and compassion, and putting that love in action. Yeah.
What do you think has taught you or showed you or given you evidence that that definition of self-love is your definition of self-love? Like, where have you sort of amassed this understanding or orientation? Because oftentimes, in my experience anyways, self-love comes from like going through some shit. And so I'm really curious if you could, yeah, just paint us a little bit of a picture of what your experience has been to give you this perspective, which is beautiful. And I really want to thank you for articulating that.
Yeah, I think that, you know, for a long time, I felt like self-love was something like, you know, all right, I'm gonna go and do the bubble baths, and I'm gonna go and buy the things that I need, and in some ways, self-love can show up that way. But I think the more meaningful ways in which self-love has really like shown up in my life were the places where it was easy for me to shame myself. It was easy for me to judge myself. It was easy for me to fragment myself. And those are the places where I have truly learned that actually applying this idea of self-love was actually much more meaningful in sort of reaching my goal of truly feeling that internal liberation and truly feeling that space where I have access to a little bit more joy and I have access to a little bit more peace. So in a lot of ways, the journey for me has been truly like an internal sort of practice that has come through lots of hardship. That's how I've gained this understanding. And also knowing that it wasn't just a process of sort of this internal practice, but also externalizing it and also making it 3D in some way, making love an action item, not just for myself, but also for my community and the people around me. Because in a lot of ways, I don't believe that self-love is any different than loving community. I think that those two things are intertwined and that they go hand in hand. So yeah, that's how I've sort of gained that understanding.
You're kind of alluding to this, I think, already, but I'm really curious about who your biggest teachers have been around self-love, or what your biggest teachers have been around self-love.
That's a good question. I can name so many people that have really inspired me in this work. And in a lot of ways, when you hear something, you recognize something that is maybe already within you, and you think, yes, I found the words to maybe acknowledge some of my personal experiences. But listen, I have ADHD and I'm not really good at memorizing names or passages or people, but what I tend to truly remember are the things that I have learned through my body. My first big lesson in life, my first big real teacher was grief. I lost my dad very suddenly when I was really young. And that was one of the greatest teachers I've ever had in my life was grief. And, you know, I've learned a lot through rage. I've learned so much through care. I've learned a lot through celebration. I've learned so much through having to be patient. I've learned a lot through sex. Sexuality has been a great teacher in my life. And really being in relationship has been the places where I got to meet myself. I got to see myself be mirrored. And in a lot of ways, the places where I got to notice what are the things that feel like I want to run with and what are the things that I feel like I'm wanting to shift. So actually being reflected by others has been really meaningful in teaching me how I want to walk forward in this life. Hmm.
Something that I'm noticing as you're, even in your response, is the framing of seeing so many of those experiences, like you just mentioned grief, as an opportunity or as a teacher or as something that, you know, is a value add for you. I'm curious of that framing or that orientation of, you know, I get to, how does that for you aid you in your self-love work? Because that's I don't know, it's really small, but I think it's also really important. And I'm curious of how you got there. I'm curious of if that's now a conscious practice for you of reframing these messy, you know, experiences, these really harmful experiences in retrospect as I got to do this, I learned this. There's something that's happening. And I'm just curious if you can explain that for us.
I love that question. Yeah, I wouldn't be the person I am today if I didn't experience these things. And I'm not saying that I saw it this way from the jump, right? Like you experience those things and you're struggling and it's difficult and it's hard. But there is something that has really, really been embedded added in my experience, which is that healing is absolutely possible. And it's a continuous journey, right? It's not like some like end goal where like I'm healed, but in the process, parts of what I've been able to reclaim is the, first of all, the skills that I have learned through the hardships that I have experienced, some of which are actually super helpful in what I do right now for work and how I am in relationships. Some of the opportunities that I have gained from those experiences have made me much more empathetic, more open to other people's experiences, but also less triggered mm-hmm. by other people's experiences because I've navigated my own. It has also like given me, you know how they say like you can't really experience light without darkness. And I know this feels like incredibly like easy to say, but the moments of joy that I have access to now feel so special. They feel like, you know, this is something that I've worked up to be able to have this ability to feel this joy, to have this ability to have this moment of peace. It feels like a real celebration for me. And I don't know that I would have had that experience had I not also had great hardship in my own personal life.
Yeah, so I'm really loving this message around healing being possible. It resonates so deeply with me as well. Finding the teachings, finding the medicine in even the most difficult experiences. And also we know that not everybody has that experience. And I'm wondering, through your experiences and your work, what do you think are some of the barriers to self-love or some of the pathways? Like, what are the things when we have such a difficult experience, what do you think can make the difference, you know, between it really just breaking us down and making things worse for us, or being able to find that healing and that medicine and that self-love through the suffering?
Yeah. I think that I'm just reminded by this quote by Rumi. Your task is not to seek for love, but to look for all the barriers that we have built against love. Mm. And for me, I don't think that this work is just an exploration that's external, internal rather, but I think that there's something to be said about also noticing the ways in which, as a society, there are so many barriers to self-love. Right. Like, I think that when we have this conversation of self-love, we think, oh my God, I should be here. Like, this feels like this is something that should be embedded in me. But actually, in a lot of ways, we are brought into a society that actually inspires us to do anything but feel loving towards ourselves. Especially if you have been marginalized by design, there's a lot of messages that are being sort of embedded in your being and internalized that would make it really quite difficult to feel that self-love. So first of all, I would say that a very real and honest sort of reflection and building of self-awareness or even exploration of what are the conditions in which I was brought up, and was self-love even something that I was taught to do? But I think that what can make the difference, and I think what I've noticed a lot in myself and maybe in the people that I've supported, I think the very first barrier is judgment or shame, or that like critical voice that sort of steps in really quickly and stops us on our tracks, right? And sort of shames us and puts us back into that box. And I think that that's the first voice that we tend to want to almost be in relationship with. Because in a lot of ways, I think that for me, when I used to hear that voice, I would be like, oh my God, that's me speaking to myself. That's me. But I think through this journey, I've learned to understand that this is actually like a voice that has been internalized. And actually my work is to be in relationship with that voice and to understand a little bit more about it, as opposed to reacting to it. Like, to actually be in conversation with this voice and to understand, where do you come from? How come you're here? What are you trying to do? Mm-hmm. Can we do this differently in some way?
Thank you for that. The topic of our conversation is radical self-love. And I was actually going to ask, where does the radical come in for you? And I was going to test that against what you just mentioned around that internalization of like outside external things that is happening here. And like, wondering if that resonates, like that a radical self-love has an appreciation of all the things we're up against, not just internally, but like structurally, like systemically, or if you would, you know, consider radical self-love to be something else? Because I'm hearing that it's not just the bubble bath, and that seems like a profound thing to name, obviously, and state. But I'm also hearing that it's that relationship that you're creating with the parts of yourself that are the hardest on yourself. Can you just describe for us what is radical self-love to you? Because I don't want it to be implied that we all have the same definition. And I'm curious, even Lala, like if that, what I just mentioned resonates if, as you came up with this topic for us to discuss.
Yeah, I think for me, everything we're up against structurally is such a huge part of what makes it radical. Like to be in these bodies that have been targeted by these multiple systems of oppression, and to choose to not only feel this love for ourselves, but to act in ways that are loving towards ourselves, which, you know, it isn't just, again, it's not just the bubble baths, as we keep saying, it's setting really important boundaries. It's rejecting violence. It's fighting back against violence. You know, it's being in the streets, like all of those kinds of things. I think that is, to me, what makes it radical. I'd be curious, Nadine, if that resonates with you, if there's more to it for you.
Yeah, I feel like we're going to be haters of bubble baths. Listen, I want to be clear. I love a good bubble bath.
On the record, for real.
Listen.
Yeah. I literally had one last night. It was the best. So, yeah.
Listen.
It's part of it.
Some good Epsom salts, some bubbles. I love it. It's self-care to me. But yeah, it doesn't feel like just that. And I think, yeah, what feels radical about it is, I think if we're working towards decentering the systems and values that have been systematically like oppressive and dehumanizing, then I think that we need to introduce like a new center, new values. And I think that for me, what feels like a tenable value, something that can shift the needle towards something that feels more equitable, something that feels more compassionate, is really centering love. And, you know, I know that people have this really sort of compact and constrictive idea of love, but for me, it feels so expansive. And what feels radical about it, what feels radical about self-love, is really decentering the voice that would be shaming of myself, that would be judging of myself, that would ask me to constrict, and that would ask me to not be who I am, and to actually center something that is much more generous, that is much more kind, that is much more compassionate, and that is also like decentering this idea that I have to be perfect, like this decentering of perfectionism on the journey. Does that make sense to you, Nico? Like, what are your thoughts?
No, that makes perfect sense to me. Thank you both for your answers. And I think both of what you have said resonates for me. I also find it really important, you know, as we tease out what radical love is or add some nuance to what love is, I also wonder around, as we're talking about transformative justice for self, how love can show up and how love should show up for ourselves as self-accountability, and like making sure that we are loving ourselves enough to, you know, do the things that, you know, as Lala had mentioned in our previous episode, I believe, like do the things that we want to do, but somehow we find ourselves, you know, not wanting to prioritize. And so I'm curious if that is also part of your definition of radical love, that self-love, that it has to involve, and I want to almost like assert that it has to involve some form of self-accountability insofar as, or at the very least, to ensure that we are moving in the world in alignment with the values that we have, right? Because like that is how we show love to both ourselves, but also other people around us. And as you mentioned, as both of you have mentioned, like those two are inextricably linked. Like how we love ourselves is also a reflection, or can also be a reflection of how we love other people. So yeah, I'm just curious about that piece around self-accountability and what role you see that plays in a radical self-love movement, practice, embodiment.
For me, when you're talking about accountability, I think that it's absolutely incredibly important. And the ways that I think I've kept myself accountable is through community, through being reflected. Because in a lot of ways, you can't do that work entirely by yourself, right? We're not like, you know, enlightened beings. We have our own humanity. And in a lot of ways, our community can help us remain accountable. But what I've noticed is that maybe accountability has been sort of weaponized and can be weaponized as judgment and as shaming.
Yeah.
Which to me, it is not. I think that there's a way to be accountable and to also be compassionate towards ourselves and to also notice, yes, I'm not necessarily centering my values in this moment, but through this practice of being like really aware of my humanity, can I create more space to continue to center those values as opposed to using our energy to shame ourselves and to judge ourselves and to put ourselves down again for not being perfect on this journey. So I think that even in the practice of accountability, there is self-love, there is self-compassion, there is self-generosity.
Mm-hmm. In this different definition of accountability, because you're 100% right that oftentimes our orientations to accountability are all about punishment, you know, really carceral in logic. It's about like, there's a consequence. I need to make myself pay. I need to make other people pay. And so what I'm hearing you say is like accountability is part and parcel of self-love, but it's different. And I love that. Thank you for naming that. I think it's really important.
Yeah.
So as we've been bringing in the structural and these community elements, I wanted to ask, I know a lot of your practice is working with other Black queer folks like yourself, and there are very, you know, specific and particular systems of oppression that target Black queer folks. And I'm wondering if there are specific ways that you think radical self-love factors into Black queer healing and liberation.
Yeah, that's a great question. Listen, I've been so honored to be in community with the people that I have. And the first, like my first impulse is to highlight the brilliance of Black and queer communities that I have been part of and also in relationship with. And I think the first thing that I have learned, and that might be corny to say, but I honestly in my body really believe that there is really nothing that you can do to take out the sun. Like you cannot, you know, you could put as many clouds as you want. You could put as many planes as you want. You could do whatever you want. The sun is undeniable. It is unbreakable. It is, you cannot disempower like that energy. And to me, this is the brilliance that I continue to see always and continuously within the Black community, within Black queer community. And it's something that feels so true. So even starting the work from this place, to me, feels like the journey is more of a reclamation as opposed to like building the step to get to somewhere new. To me, it feels like reclaiming something that was taken away. So I'm starting even from that. But what I've really learned is that I think a lot of the work that has to be done is there's a lot of energy that we are expanding doing collective work. And it's so necessary. It's so necessary to change the structures and to demand equity and to be in real sort of mobilizing this energy to create change. And also, I think that at the very same time, I think that we really need to expend similar, if not maybe more energy, really understanding how those messages have been internalized and how they're preventing us from that internal space of liberation. Because that's just as important for us to be able to live life and to experience life with as much of that feeling of agency, as much of that feeling of liberation, as much of that feeling of being able to embrace our wholeness and to be able to actually be mirrored through people that truly see us, as opposed to be mirrored through the lens of a society that is by design trying to make us feel like we are less than. So that's what I've learned and what I continue to notice in the work that I've been honored to do.
Something that you mentioned just now really strikes me, in particular, that element of almost reclaiming something that was taken something that feels like it's been appropriated or we feel distanced from. And it reminds me of how valuable remembrance and sort of archival, like looking back at history, finding the representations, finding the people, the ancestors who were doing this work and have been doing this work that have been, you know, whitewashed. Their legacies have been repressed. We've been really dispossessed from even accessing them in whatever institutions that are made for that exact reason, right? So I'm wondering, you know, if you have any guides or teachers or, you know, folks of the past that you turn to, you mentioned Rumi before, that have provided you that entryway or that mirror that you just described, that you would like to, you know, name for us here. Because I think that there's something really powerful about naming who came before us and who sort of guides us. And I want to tie that back to self-love, because so much of how we learn to love ourselves can come from how we experience love or witness love. And so, yeah, like what love stories, what self-love lessons, what folks who have taught you about self-love or radical self-love do you want to claim and name with us?
That's a wonderful question. I'm all about sort of honoring ancestry and our ancestors that have come before us. And I think that another part of oppression is also denying us the right to know the fullness of our history. And the ways in which I think our story is always being told is somehow a willingness to be disempowered, which has never been our story. And part of my journey of self-love has been to almost look and be really invested in looking for stories of power that come from our ancestors. And for me, I mean, I'm Haitian. And I mean, we are the first to have gained our independence, right? Through like our own hands, sweats, tears. And to me, that's a story of victory that is one for all Black people. Mm-hmm. Like this is part of our history. And a lot of us don't even have access to that.
Yeah.
To know that that is part of our story, that we were the first slave colony that gained independence. And, you know, we have paid greatly for it through like global sort of unity. But nonetheless, that's a story that cannot be taken away from us. But there's also Queen Nzinga from Angola, which is a story that I came upon recently as I was running some healing circles. And this is an ancestor that was incredibly powerful and managed to save so many lives from enslavement at a time where it was nearly impossible to conceive of, let alone someone do that, but also a woman to be in this position of power and to be able to save so many people from enslavement until her natural death. And those are the stories that I continue to try to reclaim, because to me, those are the ones that I'm centering in my life. Mm. And, you know, I can name you an assortment of other folks that are maybe in more recent history, like bell hooks and Audre Lorde, that have really impacted me in deep ways. But I'm also looking for those that maybe have been designed to be forgotten in our past, to also center the work that I do personally and also collectively. How about you, Nick?
Man, don't ask me. Don't ask me. I'm supposed to be asking you the questions. I don't, you know what? I don't think I have a good answer. And I'm disappointed in that. Ask me in a month and I'll have some better answers for you for sure. But and I want to follow up with you about this queen, because I think that's a really incredible story that I've never heard before. So yeah, let's follow up later.
I'll DM you in a month.
Please. Yes.
Well, I really appreciate you sharing those stories, and I'm just really feeling so much fullness and how much power there is in not only claiming self-love within ourselves, but the ways that we can find it mirrored back to us in community and the ways that I'm just really feeling the power of our ancestry behind us, being the product of so many thousands of years of like the love of our ancestors. And whether we know who those ancestors are or not, I just have such a strong sense that they are behind us, and it feels so much more supportive, you know, to have all of that with us than to think that we're on this like self-love journey by ourselves, which it can often feel like. Maybe a final thought for me is I'm just wondering, you know, if there might be somebody listening who feels really far from self-love, like maybe that concept is feeling really, really inaccessible to them or something they're not really sure how to reach for. Do you have any thoughts about what even like a first tiny step towards that concept could look like, or a way that somebody might be able to start to claim that for themselves?
Yeah, this is my humble understanding of the journey. And I think that the very first step is your willingness. I think that the very first step is being able to imagine that something else might be possible. And I think for me, the second step has looked a lot like curiosity. Maybe curiosity means that you don't exactly know what self-love would look like. You don't really know what are the steps to get there. But I would encourage that person to perhaps look at the places where self-love is not possible. What are the barriers to self-love right now as they stand in your world? And what are the places where you feel like self-love is a little bit more possible? And look at the qualities of those two containers. And as you get curious about what is the environment that creates more access to self-love, maybe that can be something that you continue to center in your world. Maybe that those elements are the ones that you might lean closer to, and maybe creating a little bit more boundaries around the places that actually take away from your ability to experience self-love. So it might very much look like leaning towards what feels more life-affirming and sustainable, and actually creating boundaries towards what is actually taking away from your life force. That's what I think.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Nadine. Really appreciate that just invitation for curiosity. And a willingness, I think, is such a beautiful sort of first step for those of us that find radical self-love to be inaccessible or elusive and something that we just, you know, is not for us. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for those really wonderful questions.
I feel really grateful that you're a part of our local community, that you're practicing, that folks get to do healing work with you. And thank you so much for bringing your brilliance here today.
Thank you both.
What a beautiful conversation. I'm so glad that we had Nadine join us. What stood out for you, Lala, in our discussion?
There was so much. I just felt like my heart was so full and expansive the whole time that we were talking. But one of the things I've been thinking about since that conversation is when she was saying, you know, you can't stop the sun from shining, that no matter how many clouds there are, like the sun is still there. And I guess for me, it gave me this sense of self-love as being inevitable, as like already existing, as being something that we can sort of rediscover and reconnect to and build upon. And so often self-love has felt so difficult that it felt really relieving to think of it as something that is already there.
I feel so in alignment with you on that. It kind of reminds me of when we had our conversation in a prior episode about wholeness and like the difference between perfection and how wholeness is like, you're already enough. Like there's already some, and then, and there's something about what Nadine said about the sun continues to shine, that like the inevitability of it, the fact that even when we might not be able to access it or see it or witness it or experience, you know, like even if it might feel like out of reach, that it's still, the power is still there. It's undeniable and it continues. And it's not, it's like, I don't know, whenever I've thought about self-love, let alone radical self-love, I've always seen it as like the bubble baths and like the sort of really like over-intentional, if that even is a, you know what I'm trying to say, where it's almost like you have to be trying to do it in order for it to be. And there's something about the sun always shining as this metaphor for, you know, self-love, as we live and breathe, that could also be it. Like that could also be our practice of self-love. Like it doesn't have to be so like out there and like inaccessible and like bubble bath and so tied to capitalism and all of those other things. So yeah, that really resonated for me.
Absolutely. It reminds me of when I was in my early years of being in therapy. And I think that's really when self-love became more of a focus, and it did feel very difficult to access. And I remember that during that time, and even when I was in counseling school, I felt very defensive anytime the topic of self-care came up. And I remember talking about it with my therapist at the time, and I think I just felt like I had no idea how to do it, and I felt like I was failing at it. And I remember her saying to me, well, I can observe plenty of ways that you care for yourself. Like, do you want me to share? And I said, yes. And she said, you know, the way you put so much thought and effort into your style, like your clothes and your makeup, you know, or the fact that you go to therapy every week, things like that, that were just very taken for granted, I think. And I didn't realize that that could be part of self-care or self-love. And so thinking about, because it was in the question around the role of self-love in Black queer liberation, thinking about just the ways that as people who are targeted by multiple systems of oppression, that we keep living. And that we keep fighting, and that we have the politics that we do, and that we keep trying and showing up. I mean, I think those are really actually monumental acts of self-love that maybe are just sort of taken for granted, that we don't realize how much that shows our love for ourselves and our communities.
Yeah. And something about what you just said really struck me as like, we almost have to like unlearn or reteach or decolonize or unearth like the different lessons that we've been taught about what, first of all, what love is in general, and then obviously what self-love is. And like I said before, like really divorce it from these performances of love. And you know how, as bell hooks has written and said, that love is an action, like it's not just a feeling. Self-love isn't just, and mind you, I don't think it should always even include things like the bubble bath, because I want to, for me anyways, I want to figure out like, is this what I've been taught about what it means to love myself, to just take a bath? Like, or is this, am I adding an act of ritual and remembrance or self-reverence? Like, how am I using the bubble bath as an example to actually spend time with myself or give myself what I need or whatever it might be? And I think there's so many messages that will tell us about what love should look like or should feel like, that it's so easy. It's unsurprising that, you know, you had felt frustrated when self-care came up, because it's like, for many of us, the image that comes into mind is like about performing it in a particular way. And I resent that. I also know that I'm part of that. Like, I know that part of that also is appealing. Like, it's nice to luxuriate. It's nice to take care of yourself, but it's got to be more than that in order for us to actually be as nourished and as fulfilled and as cared for as we deserve. Like, it's beyond our skin, you know, it's beyond like our skincare regime. It's beyond like mm-hmm. any of those things. And so, yeah, I just, there's something about what you said, which made me think of like, how can we better divorce self-love from the performance of doing it in front of other people or for social media? Or how can we divorce self-love from the sort of impact of capitalism and like the beauty hierarchy and so many other things? Like, there's so many other interesting little intersections where love has been co-opted almost. And it's hard to wade through them, and it's hard to figure out how we get to a place where we can accept like waking up in the morning, like, you know, adorning ourselves in whatever makes us feel beautiful, or adding ritual or some kind of act of remembrance of our ancestors or ourselves or our family or our love, whatever it might be, as love, as a form of self-love.
Mm-hmm. I think another thing that really resonated to me about that metaphor, that I think is really useful about that metaphor, thinking about, you know, the way she said, you know, there might be a lot of clouds, but it's still there. I'm just thinking about how often it feels like self-love can be talked about in a sort of binary way, like you love yourself or you don't, kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yeah, and I'm thinking about like all of the pressure that I've had a lot of people express to me, the pressure that that creates and the shame that that creates when,
totally,
you know, they're feeling a lot of shame about other things, you know, or, you know, being really hard on themselves or feeling in some ways like they hate themselves. And I'm thinking about things like, as good as it sounds, like RuPaul's thing about, you know, if you can't love yourself, how in the hell are you going to love somebody else? Or, you know, an even harsher one, sometimes people say, like, if you can't love yourself, how can you expect anyone else to love you? Mm-hmm. And it can really create this feeling for people who are struggling with it, like, I don't deserve to be loved, or I can't offer love in a way that is meaningful or valuable because I still struggle with shame or self-hatred in some ways. And thinking about how the sun and the clouds can all exist, it's like we can be struggling with that, and that doesn't mean that we don't have self-love.
Right.
And how much would it kind of liberate us from some of that shame or some of that pressure if our struggles don't mean that the self-love isn't also there shining?
Thank you so much for saying that, because I've struggled with that, and I witnessed people struggle with that, loved ones, friends, and I know it just feels really personal. And the metaphor, yeah, it's beautiful. In the sky has the capacity, depending on where you are geographically, to have like the sun and the clouds, and there's rain and there's storm and there's mm-hmm. rainbow, like all of it exists. It's all there, and it'll come back mm-hmm. again, right? And it's like, how can we almost find the beauty in the that is, and simultaneously appreciate the storms as they're coming up or dissipating or whatever it might be? Like, there's the both and that is so often missing in the conversation about self-love, because you're right, it's always seen as like either you have it or you don't, either you're really good at it or you're failing at it. And so much of our lives are like in binaries where it puts this unnecessary expectation for us to always be, for me anyways, it's put this unnecessary expectation for me to always be in progress, in the works. And it's like, well, when am I going to be able to also appreciate where I'm at, the work that I have done, witness myself in my current state, and not always, once again, coming back to that piece about perfection, like not always seeing it as like, once I am able to not be activated or triggered in this way, then I'm going to know that I've really healed, or then I will, you know, what all, there are all these like, you know, benchmarks of success that I think we might consciously or unconsciously create for ourselves that I think can sometimes make the reality of how we're loving ourselves be less visible or clear to ourselves. Like, it can make it feel like it's not there when it actually is. And it's amazing that you had a therapist that told you and could see and could articulate for you, like, that's love too. That's how you're showing up. It's so much harder sometimes for us to be able to see that in ourselves and to be able to recognize those victories, because they are that.
Absolutely. And speaking of the sort of less obvious or less well-recognized expressions of self-love. I really love the way that Nadine talked about grief and sex and rage as being huge teachers of self-love. And in particular, rage, it is so not, I think, what people would go to initially, right, when you're thinking about expressions of self-love. But I've had the privilege of hearing Nadine talk at other times about anger as being like your life force and how healing anger is. And I've also gotten to know anger as this like beautiful protective energy. And especially as women, as non-binary people, as racialized people, and in particular, you know, for Black folks, the ways that anger has been so condemned in us and so suppressed in us, the ways we've been taught to completely divorce ourselves from our anger, which is our greatest protector. You know, it's like, what could be more self-loving than connecting with this thing that really expresses like our dignity, right? Our worth, like the fact that we have boundaries, that we have a right to exist, that we have a right to not be harmed or not be humiliated or not be made less than. All of these things, I think, make rage an incredibly beautiful and even divine expression of self-love. But I never hear people talk about that.
Yeah, thank you for that. I have lots of theories about this, like, you know, why anger, rage, and in particular, whose bodies are allowed to express it and how do we get punished for doing it. And it feels like who wins when we're not able to get angry or we're not able to be enraged by the things that we endure. These systems of oppression have taught us that actually the problem is just you and you alone. And it's so much more challenging within and under those systems to externalize and say, wait a minute, like things are actually working exactly as designed because it wasn't made with me in mind. And so the fact that we can tap into anger and rage, like you said, divine, righteous, like how enabling for those systems of oppression to divorce us and to expect us to experience anti-Blackness, misogynoir, ableism, colorism, racism, sexism. We're supposed to just be like, well, that's just that, as opposed to, no, why do we have to experience this? Like, there must be something else. And I think so often, and we've talked about this in like one of our first episodes about anger, right? About like how oftentimes anger is always framed as something that is destructive, that is always tied up in abuse of power, that it's always power over, that it's never something that can be an indicator of boundaries being crossed, for example. And for me, and I said this last time in our conversation, like, when I don't allow myself to sit in my anger, I actually bypass a lot of the signs that my body is telling me that I have had my boundaries crossed, that I even have the right to say, hey, wait a minute, let's have a conversation at another time because this is not okay with me. It's so interesting, like, that the ways we're taught about love are passive, and also it's all about being sort of like docile about it and not seeing yourself as an active participant that's co-creating what you want, what we want together. Like, this is just the way it is. Like, that's love. It's just let it be. There's something so mellow about the way that we are oriented to love sometimes. So,
yeah, we're much less threatening if we love ourselves by being in a bubble bath rather than, you know, on the streets fighting.
That's it.
Even though, again, I do not have an anti-bubble bath agenda.
No, we are
I'm
pro.
Not being paid to. But speaking of self-love in action, the active self-love, Nadine talked a lot about that, about self-love in action. And I'm wondering, what is self-love in action looking like for you these days?
Oh, girl, I'm so happy you asked me this question. Sometimes it's saying no to saying no. It's also not ignoring my desire to express myself or communicate what's going on for me internally. I often do that.
I spend a lot of time in my head, and I've noticed that I've been working on and trying to get better at actually communicating what's bothering me, actually putting language to the feeling so I don't have to shoulder it alone. And so I'm able to just put it out there. I think that's an act of self-love, because oftentimes I just suffer in silence, like suffer alone or kind of ruminate by myself. And then the solution that my brain always has is it's your fault. It's like, it's you're the problem. Right. And so it's like when I'm able to at least communicate what it is that I'm feeling or thinking, it gives many more opportunities for somebody to disrupt the cyclone or the tornado or whatever it might be. And that's been really helpful for me. I also find myself actually prioritizing my health and my wellness in different ways than I used to. And by that, I mean really focusing on what it is that I need and what it is I'm sensing my body needs me to do in order for it to feel as well as possible, rather than any of the external messages, any of the external potential judgments. Because I, like, once again, spending so much time in your head, it's really easy to outthink myself or think myself out of what I'm feeling. And I'm recognizing that just honoring the feeling and acting on the feeling is also really good too. I don't need to spend all of my life in continuous thought cycles and spirals like that. I don't know how to connect the dots between that and self-love, but there's something about that for me. And I'm wondering, like, do you know therapeutically what that can offer, is like the feeling versus thinking, or the feeling and the thinking, but finding more opportunities to honor the feeling and take action on the feeling as opposed to only valuing the thought.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you said it, it's honoring what is, you know, it's honoring this part of you that I think our feelings are some of the most important sources of information that we have about ourselves and about our needs and what's happening for us. And, you know, I think it's a very colonial thing that we've been so divorced from that really sacred, innate way of knowing within ourselves. Thinking it's important, obviously, but there's so much more, I think, that comes into that is, you know, taught to us or socialized into us. And I think our feelings are, not that those aren't affected, of course, by our socialization and things like that, but I do think it is a connection to the divine. I think it is something that is a very sacred source of knowing within us. So to honor that, I think, is really to honor who you are.
Thank you. Thank you for that explanation. It really is helpful for me. Mm-hmm. I'm curious for you, what practices of self-love have been nourishing for you? What have you been practicing? What's felt really affirming?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest thing for me right now is I have been really up against ableism in, I mean, I always am, of course, but I think I've been really, really in process around it, because I have been really struggling with my health the last couple of months. And then in the last few weeks, it got like really, really, really bad and was very like debilitating. And there is so much that comes into it that makes me feel like I'm a burden to my partner. I'm a burden to my coworkers. There's a metaphor around ableism that has to do with taking something hot out of the oven. Have you heard this one?
No, I haven't. Tell us.
So it's basically able-bodied people are able to take things out of the oven, like something hot out of the oven with oven mitts. And they think that disabled people can do the same thing, but they don't see that we're doing it without oven mitts. Mm. So it's basically like, you technically can physically do this thing, so you should. And the fact that, you know, you then have third degree burns all over your hands doesn't really matter to people. It's like, but you can do it. So
do it.
Don't make excuses.
Right.
And I think I've been really up against that, feeling like I need to get this work done, even though it's going to push me over the edge and I'm going to be in excruciating pain for, you know, the rest of the night and the week and whatever. Or my partner just cooked, I can do the dishes technically, but again, it's going to push me into excruciating pain. Mm. And it's so difficult to not feel like a burden when I can't do those things, or feel like ashamed, or feel like I'm just not trying hard enough. But really valuing myself and self-love is like asking me to face those feelings of shame and fear around how people around me might react, to value myself enough to say, I actually don't need to do that. And I'm not going to do something that is going to harm me because ableism tells me that I should be able to when I really can't. You know, I don't deserve to like live in pain. I should be able to like not have to push myself so far past the limit. You know, able-bodied people don't have to do that.
Yeah. Sometimes you tell me things about like that oven mitt example, but even just what you've mentioned, and it strikes me that there's so much ableism in our society to wade through. Like as you were talking, it made me think of, you know, in elementary school, good educators will be like, it's about effort. Like, are you trying? Like, are you doing it? And that's seen as more accessible than, did you get 100%? It's like, did you make an effort? But even in that, like, even in some of our conceptualizations of creating space so that everyone can be part of the thing or do, the, you know, whatever it might be, it's like, we're still missing the mark. Like, it's so wild. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I'm also really, yeah, just struck by how shame can come in so many different directions. And it's like wanting to show up as your best partner, wanting to be able to have a reciprocal relationship where you're able to provide, you know, somebody does the dishes, you do the cooking or whatever it might be. And it's like all of these constructs also create so much less space for our honoring of what is true, which is like, you can't push yourself past the point of, you know, that's not what your loved one wants of you. That's not what nobody wants you to suffer. And yet, like, even as that might be communicated to you, it's like, so anyways, I'm probably just rambling, but it's really striking me that like, I'm hearing from you that the self-love comes from recognizing that while you might be able to, with air quotes around, do something that doesn't necessarily make it good for you. And therefore it's like, that's enough. Like, that's enough of a reason to not do the thing.
Exactly. So that is very much a work in progress.
Yeah.
And as we're learning, that's okay.
Yes.
It can be a work in progress.
Yeah.
Having discussed radical self-love in depth, how are you understanding its role in our theme this season in transformative justice for self?
It's like loving myself enough to meet myself where I'm at and recognize when I need to pause. It's loving myself. And right, enough is not like 100%. It's like enough for now, enough for me to like meet myself where I'm at. Like loving myself enough, even at that as a phrase, makes me feel like I need to put context around it. But loving myself enough to want what's best for me and want what's best for others, and for those things to not be mutually exclusive. That might mean they look different, like what was good for me and what's good for you might look different. It also makes me think of how, in the same way that self-love can be a lesson be learned through sex and rage and through community and through our relationships and all of these things, it also reminds me of the ways that accountability can look like love, and that accountability should always include, how am I honoring my own dignity? How am I honoring this other person's dignity? How am I honoring the place that I'm at right now? How am I creating conditions inside of me to actually facilitate more change and not scare myself away from it because I have learned and internalized so much ableism, anti-blackness, misogynoir, that feels, it's like, how do we unshackle ourselves or loosen ourselves from those things so that we can find even the smallest little piece or pathway forward or around or through
I think that self-love in a transformative justice for self kind of context looks like creating conditions of willingness to continue, like continue to move forward, continue to move through. Mm. And that doesn't mean continue to keep going, sort of like trudging along even when you can't make it another step, but it means that even as we're pausing, we're recognizing that as like sacred in the process of change. Like, oh, as I pause and I honor my capacity right now, I'm learning this lesson of like what is too much for me and where I need to be more kind to myself and where I need support from other people and where I need more patience, where I need to learn. Like, there's just, I feel like self-love as a concept or as a construct rather is like the most fertile ground for us to be able to be present in change, because it allows us to access that presence that oftentimes if we're only looking at change as this linear thing, when I'm this and I have that, then I'll be happy, then I'll feel healed, whatever it might be, as opposed to where am I at right now and how can I find a little measure of what it is I'm searching for in myself today. Mm-hmm. The self-love, it doesn't always look like me being like, you are that bitch. Like, you can do all things. Like, a lot of the times for me, the self-love's also in terms of how I support myself in continuous change and healing. It just looks like today I need this and today I'm going to give myself this.
Yeah, to me, again, going back to the way Nadine was able to frame self-love as being both something that we can cultivate and something that already exists.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about self-love in the transformative justice for self process as both being this thing that we can really intentionally draw on to ask ourselves, like, what are the conditions that I need? You know, what are the conditions that I deserve? What would most support my wellness? I think those are such important questions to be asking. And I also think, you know, self-love is the thing that urges us towards change and urges us towards healing in the first place.
Yeah.
And as much as change and healing can be intentional processes, I think that urge towards it is so natural. And I think it's something that, yeah, we can understand and start to recognize it as a radical self-love that has been like divinely given to us, that is innate within who we are as humans.
That urge piece is so important to me that you just said. Who am I to deny myself the thing that I feel so strongly about, which is that I deserve dignity and care and respect? Putting the lid on something that is bursting at the seams, it's like, yeah, how can we deny that inevitability? And it's almost, it can feel so scary, I think, mm-hmm. is the reality. It can feel so scary to even conceptualize that notion of like, what do I need to create the conditions or cultivate the conditions? Like, what would it look like if I infused the love that I need in this moment today, tomorrow, in the ways that I'm moving forward in whatever change? Like, that might mean that we have to stop. That might mean we have to pause. That might mean we have to say no. That might mean we have to put boundaries up. That might mean, like, that can mean so many things that can feel risky or can feel like it's a consequence or can feel like it's a punishment as opposed to an opportunity. And yeah, that urge, it's like, I don't want to deny myself what feels so deeply right, that like deep yes. Mm-hmm. I never want to deny myself that. And I'd never want you to deny yourself that as well.